Today, I want to give a brief overview over essentially the research and development, but from the astrophysics side of things, where you may not have heard so much mentioned today. We've heard some great talks about the capabilities of industry and government. So I want to explore a little bit of the astrophysics technologies or techniques that you might be interested in and you may not be aware of, and certainly through the lens of the actual commercial needs of Australia. And as part of the SmartSat CRC bid, it would be remiss of me not to use that structure to, in fact, inform this discussion. First, though, with a show of hands, who's actually heard of the SmartSat CRC before today? Oh, man. Okay, so the next two slides are redundant. So we all know the challenges. Big country, not a lot of people, fragmented telecommunications systems, and actually no significant capability to build our own satellites to address that yet. That's the challenge. To try to solve that, the SmartSat CRC envisaged three work streams that I'll group the astrophysics technologies capabilities under. We have the advanced communications that support this Internet of Things, this distributed sensors, throughout all devices that we may soon be buying in the future. All of this is then relayed up to satellites that can essentially control themselves. And of course, then that all informs our Earth observations, which is distributed to us all on ideally a smartphone app. Right? That's the pitch. Is throughout all of this is this key educational component. We'll actually look to educate undergrads, we'll go back into the school system. We're going to try to actually, hopefully, if the bid succeeds, upskill the capabilities of our people in Australia, not just the hardware. So to kick us off in advanced communications, it doesn't really get much more advanced looking than this. Obviously, this is at Tidbinbilla, the CSIRO-run facility on behalf of NASA. 70-meter dish, as we heard from Dave Williams, are just about to extend their appetite for control or for operations of space agency assets by taking over the maintenance operations at New Norcia. It's a 35-meter dish in WA. I believe handover's like in a week or something, Dave. So, hopefully the team is well prepared for this. What you may not have heard is just up the road from New Norcia, we have the Murchison Radio Astronomy Observatory, an enormous region of radio quiet protected site, roughly speaking the size of the Netherlands, with about, 33, John and his wife left. So it's about 33 people now in that whole area. It's an incredible site. And there we have this strange looking beast. These are a series of dipoles that are grouped together on tiles. These tiles, numbering 256, are dotted across this West Australian landscape to form the Murchison Wide Field Array, a superb facility operating between 80 to 300 megahertz that is used to map distant quasars, to explore the radio sky. And because we built this ourselves, we understood its capabilities. So when things started to look weird in the data, we could understand what it was. And of course, what that was space junk, debris that was reflecting, actually, Triple J radio station back to us. We couldn't quite listen into it or didn't actually keep this coherence, but this is now tied into global space situational awareness. Going back east, we have the Molonglo telescope. These are two 800-meter arms, again, a very unusual-looking telescope, sitting in north-south and east-west array. Thanks to modern GPU capabilities, just commodity off-the-shelf GPUs, we've been able to upgrade Molonglo into what's now called UTMOST. It's one of the most powerful radio telescopes available, and this is now rapidly surveying the sky, ingesting and sifting 64 gigabytes per second, sampling at nanosecond scales, and applying a machine learning algorithm to find, well, anything in that sky, and including fast radio bursts, these mysterious objects that are as much energy as the sun outputs in a month, all in the blink of an eye. So again, this is a superb capability that is made possible by this understanding of the hardware and this in-depth capability, machine learning and GPU technologies. Now, those comms are, of course, talking to the satellites, so I asked some of my TV colleagues, some of the producers, to give me an image of a cutting-edge Australian-built satellite. And can anyone guess what I got? So, Anthony Murfitt, we've got some work to do here, man. So, RaySat, you know, a pride moment, but looking forward, what does this new intelligent SmartSat resemble? Well, in essence, something that's agile, resilient, has a digital twin. You can immediately understand what's actually occurring up in orbit, as referenced by this digital version back here on Earth. It has some advanced pointing and maneuvering capabilities, get itself out of trouble in terms of space junk, but also can have on-demand response to, well, any spatial, spectral, temporal, stereo, video requirements, because it all is, of course, operating as a formation. Ideally, adaptable payloads, and again, in the SATCOM panel, we, in fact, heard about the importance of that being in software, ideally. And then finally, all of this made possible by low-powered something processing that can actually make all of this possible and reduce those bandwidth requirements. Now, just a few of the people and companies that are interested in that, so I won't belabor this, but obviously there's a lot of work going on into these satellites. However, showing my bias as an astronomer, the bit that most interests me, at least for this talk, is, of course, to discuss these sensors, the pretty pictures. At the moment, we the superb collaboration between DLR and Peter Moore's La Trobe, I know he's in the audience somewhere, resulting in this International Space Station housed DSIS camera, a fantastic hyperspectral imager, operating essentially, I think it's reasonable to say this is one of the Rolls-Royce standard, gold standard hyperspectral cameras in orbit today. Just to give a shout out that Australia has a strategic partnership with the European Southern Observatory, giving us access to the MUSE spectrograph, very similar wavelength coverage to DSIS, but with a factor 30 higher spectral resolution. So by the time those kind of spectrographs or hyperspectral cameras are operating in orbit, astronomers will have played with that data for the best part of two decades. So it's worth bearing in mind, maybe for these future roles, hire an astronomer, just say. All right. Now, we can extend the spectrographs into the IR, sitting with the team at the AAO, which just moved to Macquarie. If you have an optics problem, they probably have the solution. And of course, the final capability of our satellites was to have the ability to move around space junk. And from Ben Green, we heard about the incredible work at CERC, where these laser guide stars are enabling us to detect this space junk in a very complementary fashion to the MWA. I won't get into the argument between optical versus radio. We're very proud of the MWA efforts at CERN. Now, we have also some broader capabilities in Australia than CERC's alone in adaptive optics. At the Keck Observatory, for example, we have the an upgrade underway. This is the twin Keck telescopes on Mauna Kea in Hawaii. We are now in the process of upgrading that adaptive optics system using a GPU-controlled real-time system being developed at Swinburne. But again, this is a national capability in astronomy. There's a lot more depth and skill, perhaps, than I think most of us might be aware of. I love this video showing some of the Earth observation satellites because it shows just how sparse it is. For the foreseeable future, much as I love the idea of these swarm satellites, the reality is we will have heterogeneous data sets. We will have to adopt this virtual or synthetic constellation. We've just had from the last panel all the challenges that that Earth observation entails. In astronomy, we are well used to dealing with messy data sets from multiple different feeds, and we're getting pretty good at it. I don't know that we're quite at this 34 petabits ingested per month, but we're actually very close to this. The square kilometer array will see us in astronomy at the petascale, where we're trying to visualize, analyze data sets at that petabyte level, tie that data into the full gamut, going through infrared, optical, and all the way indeed up to gamma. So we're trying to gain insights from that large data fusion effort. For now, the current standard is a rendering effort where you take a data cube, you ingest, and you can actually project in real time at a teravoxel per second. That is just a stupendous size of a data set to actually be in real time interrogating. And these are the kind of tools that I can see being of great benefit, I hope, to the wider community. More generally, we've been very fortunate in astronomy to receive funding to develop national capability that stretches from the Pawsey Supercomputer Centre in Western Australia as part of the SKA effort, all the way over to NCI and indeed to AusSTAR here in Swinburne in Victoria. That is, at a last headcount, 24 FTEs worth of image experts, supercomputing experts, essentially the software engineers who may be able to help you solve your problem. Very skilled, experienced people, and there's national calls for their services. So please look up ADAX if you have an issue with analyzing your data sets on large volumes. And most recently, and just because I like to show off, we got $2 million from the government for the Gravitational Wave Discovery Center. This will employ software engineers to search the data that comes from the LIGO. This is a gravitational wave detector. I cannot foresee in any foreseeable future you using that gravitational wave data in your Earth observations, being as it does, it's stretching the entire Earth by less than the distance of the proton's width. But still, it's a very exciting machine learning challenge, and some serious expertise will be developed in ingesting vast quantities of data and analyzing it in real time for complex and essentially challenging signals to even tease out from the data. So again, this is another opportunity for future collaboration between industry and astrophysics. So this very quick overview, we go from this idea of a new era of communications, satellites, and Earth observation techniques, hopefully supported by the SmartSat CRC. I haven't even mentioned the opportunities for space launch and indeed space propulsion technologies, nor the support opportunities and the efforts underway in terms of testing standards and, of course, space law. And finally, there will inevitably be opportunities out there that we can't even envisage yet. The one thing that I can promise you is that our next panel will get to the bottom of all of these opportunities and who and how do we train this future workforce to work in this growing sector.